Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Daniel Sheehan. Daniel Sheehan has the most amazing amount of information, and he's been doing incredible work for some years. He served as legal counsel for Dr. John Mack when he was called before a Harvard University faculty committee to answer for his position on alien abduction. Recently, Daniel Sheehan served as director of the Strategic Initiative to Identify the New Paradigm for the State of the World Forum. He currently teaches world politics at the University of California in Santa Cruz and acts as general counsel to Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project. And I know you were also the attorney for Daniel Ellsberg, Karen Silkwood. So you're a historian, an attorney, and it seems to me you're an activist. So Daniel Sheehan, there's so much to talk about. It's really hard to know where even to start. I've heard it said that you say that the issue of weapons in space is really important. Do you want to start with that? And if there's any other way you want to take things, feel free, because we don't have a lot of time to talk about all the things you have to talk about. I've just heard you speak for hours.
No, I think that an important focal point is this issue of the George W. Bush administration attempting to utilize the events of September 11th in their aftermath as a rationale for going forward spending hundreds of billions of dollars on this strategic defense initiative, or the Star Wars initiative, or the missile shield. It's called different names. It comes out to the same thing. It's actually spending hundreds of billions of dollars putting up a satellite weapon system around the planet under the auspices of theoretically being able to stop terrorist attacks such as those that occurred on September 11th. The fact that there's a great disconnect between what it is that was done on September 11th and the purported threat of these rogue nations of some sort to launch nuclear missiles, ballistic missiles against us, which is what the Star Wars missile shield defense is supposed to protect us against, doesn't seem to bother the administration. So they've come forward now asking for new authority to develop and to deploy this weapons system. I think that this is an extraordinarily serious problem. I think that the many billions of dollars they're talking about spending on it are coming out of the pockets of the American taxpayers and the people of the world. But the fact is that it's totally destabilizing relations, that they're having to go in and constantly beat up on President Putin of the Soviet Union, to try to get him to now back out of the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty of 1972, which prohibit systems such as this. It's one more unilateral action on the part of the Bush administration, vitiating international treaty agreements that our country has entered into, such as the Kyoto agreements, on global warming, the United Nations treaty that his father in Ronald Reagan withdrew from, the World Court, because they wanted to mount this covert war against Nicaragua. I think that this type of pattern of George Bush Jr. trying to establish unilateral positions that are designed primarily, if not exclusively, for the purpose of protecting the privileged situation the United States finds ourselves in is generating very, very bad energy around the world, the hostility of our allies even to us. And now And now he's attempting to misuse, I believe, these terrible, tragic events of September 11th to justify going forward with this huge weapons expenditure, which has no rational connection to the kind of threat that we actually experienced. And so I think that all of those things having been said, which are somewhat more prosaic or pedantic reasons, though important, for opposing this, the fact of the matter is there is some reason to believe, and this is an important point to make, there's some reason to believe that this particular weapons system that they're talking about putting up into space has a lot more purposes than simply to try to shoot down errant missiles or a missile launched by some rogue nation, assuming there's going to be some rogue nation that's going to spend the billions and billions of dollars necessary to build an intercontinental ballistic missile system. And this reason is that if you look at the potential capabilities of a weapon system like that, when they put a weapon system up like that and they, for example, hook it together with a set of telescopic systems where they're able to basically read license plate numbers on a car anywhere on the planet, they can identify people with facial features. They can program these satellites to identify facial features, which people have started to hear about now, and locate people anywhere on the planet at any given time. And what they're talking about doing possibly is mounting on these satellites a laser-guided weapon systems that can basically, you know, shoot the eye out of a bird, you know, in flight. You realize that type of an astonishing weapons array built in a ring around our entire planet to be able to monitor every single kind of activity that any individual is engaged in, and to basically terminate at will the life of virtually any person on the planet by directing a laser beam weapon to assassinate a person anywhere they can find them. And then you link that together with the additional technology they have to, in a certain sense, be able to penetrate walls. They can actually guide the laser system, audio monitoring systems, et cetera, and visual monitoring systems, sometimes to actually come into focus after having gone through entire walls. So they can actually penetrate into buildings to actually see what's going on there and possibly, you know, direct laser technology inside buildings. This is just a generation of weaponry that our human family has to really confront. We didn't get wind of the atomic and nuclear weapons technologies when they were building them in secret in the Manhattan Project. But now we've gotten wind of this thing, and we know the kind of capabilities this has. Now, this whole second category of threat that I've raised over and above the simple costs and the inefficiencies and the total disconnect between the rationale for the program and any kind of practical application, in the second category being these horrific potential consequences for a major brooding big brother type of military presence over the entire planet. Whoever controls that particular satellite system controls the face of the Earth. So if there's any way that somebody can hijack that system, for example, they end up developing a technology to be able to tap into that, like they can tap into a computer network now and take over control of that type of a weapons system. You just don't want to have a weapons system like that around threatening the human family. But there's a third and final category of reason why we shouldn't go forward with this program, and that is that there is some reason to suspect that the United States military intelligence services have, over the past 55 years since World War II, have actually encountered extraterrestrial vehicles. That I was given access to classified portions of Project Blue Book back in 1977 after President Carter came into office. The United States Library of Congress, Congressional Research Service, was asked by the president to research the issue of extraterrestrial intelligence and the UFO phenomenon. And I was actually shown photographs of undisputable UFO vehicles that had crashed at one place or another on the Earth. And there were photographs being taken of them that were in the files, United States Air Force personnel measuring these vehicles and photographing them. And it's my personal belief that if, in fact, the United States military intelligence complex were able to recover one of these vehicles during the 55-year Cold War period. There is no doubt in my mind, based upon 35 years of participation in investigating covert operations and national security activities, that they would not have told the American people about that. They would have concealed that information, and they would have attempted to use that technology that they recovered to attempt to develop some type of weapon system to assert their advantage over the Soviet Union and China. And moreover, they would have attempted to ascertain what type of technologies were available in this vehicle to actually design some type of a potential weapon system, offensive weapon system, against these vehicles and an extraterrestrial civilization from which they would have come. And that, it's just kind of the bureaucratic imperative of a national security state. And so that I believe that there's every reason to suspect that there may well be a set of technologies that have been back-engineered from such vehicles, and that they may well be mounting or could mount in the near future this type of satellite weapon system all around our planet, not only with a downward-facing type of weaponry, as I've described, with this kind of telescopic sights that can identify facial features and license plates from space, but also a laser weapon system that can shoot your eye out at 300 miles up. But they would also mount them with an outward-facing set of weaponry, perhaps rationalized on the grounds of being able to destroy asteroids threatening our Earth. You hear that drumbeat starting to go up now. But in fact, which would have the capacity for shooting down extraterrestrial vehicles. Now, if one were to put oneself in the shoes of the national security state authorities, confronted with the existence of an extraterrestrial civilization, and recognizing that these people function from a worldview which is primarily defensive and almost exclusively dialectical, that is, us versus them, good guys versus bad guys. You see it manifest all over in the human family, that they would have attempted to bring to bear the technology that they had recovered from such a vehicle into designing some type of what they would term a defensive weapon system against these UFO vehicles. But the fact is, almost every defensive weapon system has an offensive capacity, just like these satellites, these downward-facing satellites. If they were to develop this outward-facing weapon system that was capable of destroying asteroids at a distance and capable of destroying UFO vehicles, we have then crossed into an entire era of weaponization of space that could, in fact, alter the entire history of human civilization for the next 10,000 years of establishing a dialectical, warlike type of presence in outer space, so that when we, not if we, but when we establish contact with an extraterrestrial civilization, we will come armed and ready to engage in military activity against them. I think that that needs to be stopped. It needs to be stopped right here and now. In short, I believe, Sue, that what we need to do is organize a coalition of seemingly different but related interests groups here, that the people who don't want the hundreds of billions of dollars spent, because there are many, many more important projects to devote our funds to here on this planet, those who are in fact afraid of violating the anti-ballistic missile treaty and destabilizing the whole international community by this unilateral action, need to mobilize to stop doing that. Thirdly, those who are afraid of having a major Big Brother super state basically have a weapon system that surrounds our entire planet that's capable of destroying anybody, any individual or collection of people or materials upon the push of a button, ought to oppose this. Those who, in fact, are afraid of that type of a weapon system being commandeered by somebody else that can punch into and take over the direction of that kind of a technology also need to be worried. But very importantly, those of us who are attempting to prepare for the contact with an entire extraterrestrial civilization as the opening of an entire new era in human civilization need to try to prepare for a peaceful entree into outer space. That the entire theory on which NASA was sold to us in our generation, with this, that this was a peaceful endeavor, that this was undertaken for the peaceful exploration of space on behalf of the entire human family, And this is now among the other turns to the right that the Bush administration is attempting to have, such as withdrawing from the Kyoto Accords and violating the anti-ballistic missile treaties and violating our international community's agreements. They're attempting to turn away from this entire promise that was made to our generation, that space would be developed for peaceful purposes. With just one stroke of a pen now, the administration is trying to change that entire policy of saying, let's not do this, let's weaponize space, you know, on the basis of this lame theory that there's some kind of states that are going to spend hundreds of billions of dollars developing a thermonuclear intercontinental ballistic missile system to launch a missile or two at us. You know, this is crazy, and it's duplicitous.
Well, Daniel Sheehan, yeah, this is a really, really important issue. I mean, there's so many issues within that issue. I mean, the one of surveillance is really should be of concern to people, even if they're not concerned about all these other things. I don't know that people want to be watched all the time. But, of course, right now we're in a time where people seem to be, or too many people, as far as I'm concerned, interested in giving up their civil rights. And I've just heard you speak about paradigm, different paradigms and paradigm shift. And we don't have, you just spoke here, and I wasn't even here for all of it at a conference where we are right now. But I wonder if you would connect this weapons in space with what you think, I mean, what this paradigm shift. And I've heard many people say that, and usually it's kind of, oh, yeah, right. I mean, that's how I feel about it. It would be nice if. Mm-hmm. But I was really interested in the fact that you, I mean, you talked so much about so much history and many, many facts about how many people involved in the U.S. government over the last many, many years were also and all the covert operations going on, and we just don't have time to go into all that. Is there a way that people can get hold of that information, mm-hmm. by the way? And then I'll go back to the question, which is about the paradigm shift and about race and all that.
Yes, I think it turns out that a couple different talks that I was invited to give, that I spoke up in Sonoma County shortly after the September 11th events, that some of the mayors were there and some of the people in the county council and city council and stuff asked me to come and talk. And that was videotaped and recorded, and they're transcribing that and putting it on the internet on a place called Votery, V-O-T-E-R-Y, Votery.com. And they're apparently also going to be putting materials up on a website called PeaceInSpace.com. So both of those websites apparently have some of this data on it, but the Votery.com one has a one-hour presentation that I made, sort of setting forth a comprehensive overview of the logistical, tactical, and strategic moment that we found ourselves in prior to September 11th and how that's been changed. So there's sort of a comprehensive articulation of that on those websites.
Okay, well, maybe you could give us a 10-minute overview right now,
sure.
if you would, Daniel
sure.
Sheehan.
Well, the bottom line, Sue, is that we can tell now, like with George Bush coming back into power. I'm talking about George Bush Sr., who designated all of the vice president and the secretary of state and secretary of defense for his young son, who was basically a political neophyte to serve as a proxy, basically, for his father and his allies coming back into power. We can see in stark contrast, we can see the kind of policies that they're advocating kind of right out of the chute, you know, advocating, you know, ignoring all of the global warming warnings, you know, putting heavier and heavier reliance upon petroleum in coal, advocating opening up this national parks for oil exploration, you know, in giving tax relief to the richest 5% of people in the country, you know, $1 trillion of tax relief, and, you know, invading the Social Security lockbox and investing that money in the stock market, you know, which everybody would have lost their shirts on that if they put it in the market the way the market's gone since he came in as president. You know, the stark contrast to that type of a worldview that is reflected by the right-wing Republican Party from that which most people in the country have, which are usually more moderate and even more liberal and progressive worldviews. Most people don't understand that there's a kind of a very sophisticated political science behind all that. That worldviews are a very, you can get a whole PhD in social ethics, comparing and contrasting alternative worldviews. There's a great science to this, basically, and there are some half a dozen or so, actually a set of seven full alternative worldviews that are recognized by professional social ethicists in Western civilization. And it is the understanding of these that is so critical to understand that, for example, in the year 2000 election, there were five different worldviews basically really reflected. You had the moderate, the new, more moderate Democratic Party worldview reflected by Al Gore and Joseph Lieberman. It's the guys like Gebhardt, like Richard Gebhardt and all of these people that are a new, more moderate type of Democrat. Those are the classic moderates that sit right in the middle of the political spectrum. To their right is the conservatives, which are represented by George Bush and George Bush Jr. and the whole conservative Republican Party. Then you have to their right, you have the reactionaries, who are far more conservative than even normal conservatives. Reactionaries are represented by like Patrick Buchanan and this Reform Party that got captured by them. So that you have, you know, a very, very reactionary party, a conservative party, and a moderate party represented there. And then you have the liberals that were really represented by the Green Party that, you know, with Ralph Nader represented them. And then actually one step more progressive than that was this small group called the Natural Law Party of John Hagelin and a lot of those people. But they were actually on the ballot, these five different political alternatives. Each of them were representative of a very different type of worldview. Now, there are extremes at other both ends. The extreme right worldview of the complete authoritarian totalitarians were not represented in the actual election. And on the far extreme left are the kind of theologically grounded utopians that those weren't represented. But this is a splay of worldviews that is generally acknowledged by professional social ethicists to obtain in the world. What we're confronted by now is a very intense effort on the part of the moderates at the middle of the political spectrum and the conservatives to the right of the political center trying to monopolize the entire conversation. So that just this discussion between the more moderate Democratic Party and the conservative Republicans are the only choices that people are really being offered. I think that despite the fact that there were candidates at the last election, they weren't serious candidates. Virtually none of those people were serious candidates. They never had any sense of possibly winning. I think that what we clearly need to do is we need to identify a new post-war paradigm. Not only World War I and World War II are over now, but the Cold War is over now. And there's been no successful effort to identify a new alternative post-war paradigm that is peaceful and prosperous and benefits everyone. And it's not this proposal being made to globalize the entire world through the World Trade Organization, to have international capitalism, you know, basically exploit the resources of the entire Southern Hemisphere in Africa and in Latin America. You know, that's only going to lead to war.
Has already led to war.
That's right. The attempt to exploit the resources of North Africa and in the Middle East and to identify these people as primitives and you know, Stone Age people who aren't going to use their resources anyhow, and so therefore we're authorized to exploit those for our purposes, you know, is leading to the war that we're seeing now. That these people may not have intercontinental ballistic missiles or fighter jets or any air force or even any major land war force, but they can engage in a type of activity which we characterize as terrorism that can reach all the way to the heartland of our country, and that the solution isn't bombing them further back into the Stone Age or to try to assassinate their leaders of the particular organization. We have to really understand there needs to be a new alternative source of energy, for example, of the solar energy and geothermal energy, zero-point energy, a whole new area of exploration, very more modern solar technologies that are available now that would atrophy our need for this type of oil. And then we could withdraw that kind of hegemony in the Middle East. And then these people aren't going to go chasing us around because they don't like democracy or they don't even like our materialist lifestyle. They're coming over here because we've got U.S. military forces based in Saudi Arabia. We've got we're holding in power the House of Saud in Saudi Arabia, who are, everyone acknowledges, gross authoritarians, destroying everybody's civil rights in their country and living with golden toilets and in diamond-studded, shoes, and because of their small portion of the oil that they own. But Aramco, the Arab American oil companies, the seven of them, own that oil on behalf of Western civilization, that we believe we have privileged access to that oil. And we need to evolve a whole new worldview of not only alternative energy, but an alternative economic system for developing the resources, sharing them. The Law of the Seas Convention was adopted by every nation in the world except the United States and the United Nations, advocating developing resources at the ocean floors and sharing them in a way to bring up the rest of the world into the economic markets. It's a totally different thing than the view of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, giving loans to poor third world countries to build industrial infrastructure, which is owned by 1% of their population and primarily by Western governments or corporations, more pointedly. This is not an organizing principle that is viable. We need to find an alternative organizing principle, a new world paradigm that is based in natural law, that can in fact allow everyone to participate on an equal basis in the decision-making processes of our planet, in an equitable sharing of the resources so that people can live in a decent way and be friendly and live as a human family, and undertake a method of peaceful space exploration so that we can reach out and establish contact in a peaceful way with this new extraterrestrial civilization and stop the weaponization of space. Stop this next step of the dialectical world warmongers that have caused our problems up to this point in time, that small portion of our human family. We need to atrophy those institutions, but by replacing them with positive, affirmative, peaceful, natural law, alternative energy sources. And that's the new worldview that we need to pursue.
Mm-hmm. And I guess to make this difference, we have to educate, organize, and the usual things, really spread the word and get people involved and to put pressure on their officials and get in the streets and talk to their neighbors and all those usual things.
There's a whole long list of things, all of which are supplemental to each other. But the main thing is we need to have an alternative political party that is going to elect alternative candidates and put them into office to make the policy. We're not going to persuade those other people on this thing. We've got to substitute new leadership for these people, a new generation of leadership with a new worldview.
Okay, Daniel Sheehan, well, we should sure go on, and I'm sure everybody would like to hear more, but this is it for now. So you can find out more about what Daniel Sheehan, who's an attorney and a professor, teaches world politics at the University of California in Santa Cruz, and acts as general counsel to Dr. Stephen Greer's Disclosure Project, and you can find some more information on peaceinspace, oneword.com. And what's the other website?
The other one is Votery, V-O-T-E-R-Y, Votery.com.
Okay, thanks so very much, Dan Sheehan.
Thank you.
And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.